Hi, podcasters. This is Brooke with Let's Talk Art. Today I'm talking art with Chris Oliver, who is the curator of the Lightness of Labor exhibit, which is going on at the Virginia Museum of Fine Arts until April 24th. We are still in the process of lining up sponsors for Let's Talk Art with Brooke, but in the meantime, if you'd like to support the podcast, please look for my book, Reptiles on Caffeine, on Amazon. Enjoy the podcast. So how you doing, Chris?
Oh, I'm doing well. How about yourself?
Doing good. Doing good. How are things in Virginia?
Well, a little stormy today, but other than that, it seems to be that spring has finally arrived, and museum's just tooling along, so
yeah,
it's going well.
Yeah, awesome. Awesome. So tell me about this Lightness of Labor exhibit you guys have going on.
Yeah, sure. So this is a small photography exhibition that I organized that went up last fall based on 24 works from the permanent collection of VMFA, many of which had not been seen in decades. The bulk of this material was acquired in the 1970s, and I was interested in doing a photography show when I arrived here in 2013, and so looking through our storage and the materials that we had, I found this theme of early social documentary photography related to child labor and the labor movement that had been purchased by a previous employee of the museum, and who I think, who is now deceased, unfortunately, but I think he probably had a similar eye to me, and I was immediately struck by these common themes that were running through works in our collection.
Right.
And so I was interested in putting on the wall something that, you know, of course we call it an exhibition, but I almost think of it more as a meditation.
Yeah.
Because it tackles a very, very large topic in a very few number of works.
Right.
And so I'm not asking to rewrite the book on anything, but to provide our audiences with a some fabulous photographs,
right,
and the opportunity to consider the photographers' lives and the works that they produced.
Well, I think it's interesting that you call it a meditation, because I was thinking of calling it something like a documentary, and I was going to ask you but I like meditation much better. I like that word much better. Because it's not just information. These photographs evoke emotions that make you, that clearly call you to meditate. Or ruminate, you know, just whatever you want to call it, on the topic, which is, you know, pretty sad and pretty, sobering, I guess. And I wanted to kind of talk about the way people use art to kind of evoke change, to use it people use it in politics all the time. People, like, all kinds of sides of issues will use it and can use it effectively. And it's not just art for art's sake. It's art for an agenda's sake. So I was kind of, I liked what you were doing with that, but I really liked the term meditation.
I think that's, I can only make one simple point here in this exhibition, and that is what I tried to show was a move from a pure social documentary purpose that means, you know, a photograph for just pure documentation purposes, as if you were an insurance adjuster or something. To a work that furthers the goals of this documentation using aesthetics and this kind of common humanity that I think Lewis Hine and the following generation of photographers found in their subjects. And that is, does hint, as you said, at this, or really pulls on the strings of tension of this, the constant battle that has followed photography around from its invention, is this pull between, you know, is it purely, you know, a recording device? Can it have artistic purposes?
Right.
I mean, it's 2016, and I feel like we're still having that conversation.
Right, right.
That probably started in the 1840s.
Indeed.
yeah. So, and I also specifically have been informally using the term meditation because in the gallery, in trying to think about how to organize the exhibition, I didn't want to hang it in such a way that I was presenting too much of a narrative, but rather it's pretty achronological.
Mm-hmm.
And I tried to do groupings based on composition of the photographs,
right,
or interesting comparative subject matters that really, I hope, make the viewer think and stop and meditate,
mm-hmm,
where they might, you know, I think many times we walk into an exhibition and expect we're going to start with a photograph from 1901 and end with a photograph from 1930 and go directly in that straight line.
Right.
And I'd rather have it bounce around a little bit and maybe think about interesting comparisons, which is kind of why I think about it as more of a meditation.
Right, right. I like that. And these are photographs from Lewis Hine, right? Are they all from him?
So, no. So that's the other thing I wanted to think about is that of the 24 works, only 13 are by Hine.
Mm-hmm.
There's another 10 that I've interspersed,
mm-hmm,
you know, really just sprinkled through.
Right.
By photographers from the following generation. Mm-hmm. I think Hine, through the course of his own work, you know, between 1904 and when he's, you know, through the child labor movement, through the teens, and then into his later Men at Work series, which we have some of in the exhibition as well.
Right.
It really moves from that pure documentary vision,
uh-huh,
to something really aesthetic and interested in using the language,
uh-huh,
of the documentary photograph to create these kind of beautiful portraits that endow the sitter with humanity and dignity and honor and strength and all of the things he was trying to do.
Right.
And so then the photographs from the following generation I've kind of sprinkled in there to show how other artists are picking up that mantle.
Right.
And of course the following generation is dealing with the most trying epic of this is they're working during the Great Depression.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have people like Dorothea Lange, you know, doing these very haunting portraits.
Mm-hmm.
I call them portraits. You know, we don't often know, we don't usually know their names.
Right.
But, you know, they're portraits that are built up and described through, you know, composition and quality and other things in the photograph. But so where that mantle's picked up by people like Dorothea Lange,
mm-hmm,
and Walker Evans, Arthur Rothstein, Margaret Burke White, right? So again, it's also why I kind of I like to break up that narrative a little bit,
right?
Not have it just be so linear.
Cool. Yeah, I like that. I like that.
Thank you.
This guy Lewis Hine was really interesting. I was reading about him recently, and he started out as a social worker, and then that saw the need for change and used photography to get that change. And this wasn't like in like today, like when we can just snap pictures with iPhones at work.
Right.
This was like the beginning of photography, and he had to kind of like, how did he do that? So he went undercover.
Yeah. So when his first body of work was actually done in Ellis Island, and he did that while teaching high school. He took his students to Ellis Island to document the arrival of immigrants,
mm-hmm,
to the nation, and that got him noticed.
Uh-huh.
And so when he was hired by the National Child Labor Committee to travel the nation and document, you know, the abject working conditions of so many different industries in the country, when he was going into mills or fisheries or things like that, he talked about how he would often have to assume different identities,
mm-hmm,
as a fire inspector, Bible salesman, things like that.
Right.
Which is so funny because, of course, you know, the people running these industries wouldn't want these images to go out into circulation,
right,
which is what they did.
Yeah.
I mean, I should also point out that these photographs were reproduced in almost every imaginable way. They were shown in exhibitions,
mm-hmm,
but also they were put on posters, they were put in magazines,
newspapers.
Newspapers, just trying to get them out there.
Right.
But Lewis Hine, you know, he didn't have that furtive iPhone, but he would walk around with a large handheld camera, But the interesting thing about it was that the viewfinder, this was like a box, essentially, a box that maybe, you know, a foot square on, you know, on each side. Mm-hmm. But the viewfinder was on the top.
Uh-huh.
So he could be having a conversation with someone
uh-huh.
and able to kind of, you know, secretly look down and see what his camera might have found and be able to pull off a shot pretty quickly.
Cool.
Which is, again, a pretty interesting thing about how he was working.
Yeah. Yeah, that's kind of ahead of the time, it seems like.
Yeah, I mean, other earlier photographers had been going through and doing these kind of documentary works. Mm-hmm. You know, very famously, Jacob Riis is working in New York City. But, you know, what I see from Lewis Hine's work, especially over the course of his career, is a real, as he goes along, a greater emphasis on the actual people
mm-hmm.
and the humanity, and it's not so much as a look how awful this is, just a shock value type thing.
Right.
You know, the images can be quite disturbing of the children right. working in these conditions.
Mm-hmm.
But I think he's most successful, and certainly seems to be most successful, even in his own time, when it's that child caught in a pensive moment or something shared between the viewer
right.
and the person he depicts.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, I think I just thought that was really interesting. So, yeah, and I like it. He said that he was in Pennsylvania, in Western Pennsylvania for part of it. And my mom is actually from Aliquippa, and so I've been to that area and just kind of heard the stories about the steel workers and it just kind of hit home. So I was just the pictures are just they're just really, really moving, I think.
Yeah, and I think, you know, he traveled so much in the country that he documented so many of the industries that were employing child labor that for us today, we still hear stories of that are similar to those people who were working in these photographs in the steel industry, in the coal industry,
mm-hmm.
in fisheries, in northern cotton mills, here in Richmond, in tobacco plants. There's an image of people drying tobacco in their own house by a later photographer, Marion Walcott,
mm-hmm.
and it's interesting. It must be because of where we are in Richmond that I've had several people come up to me and say, oh, I remember doing that as a child. When it was too cold, we just dried the tobacco in our bedroom.
Oh, wow.
and so there's still that memory that's with us, and it's not that long ago because, you know, maybe not the Lewis Hine images, but at least the ones from the following generation are Depression-era images. There are many, many of our family members still alive that still very much remember that.
Right, right. Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah, it's certainly not something I was expecting, but it is an interesting connection.
Right, right. So, what has the response been? You said you did this exhibit last year as well?
Yeah, so, well, we put this up in, November, and it runs through the April 24th,
mm-hmm.
But it has been overwhelmingly positive, and so we actually do hope, I'm actually 95% sure it'll have a second venue elsewhere
oh, cool.
in the Commonwealth of Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
Just haven't quite committed to that institution or date yet, but it has been very popular, and I've been really enthused with photographs in teaching. Oftentimes, the arts can be put by the wayside, especially in the school environment. But when I can make that case that the art object is also relevant to whatever they might be learning in school, it is so great. So I've been able to speak to college students. And I also went and visited a fifth grade class
mm-hmm.
Here in Richmond, all of whom could relate to these photographs in different ways.
Right.
That's been pretty special for me.
Yeah.
I've enjoyed that.
Yeah. So you've gotten to go around and speak about it to different audiences?
Yeah. I mean, mostly I prefer when people can come to the museum because I'm as an art museum curator, I have a certain responsibility to the object itself, and I want them to see it in person.
Right, right.
But yeah, we've been able to to work with other community organizations that are working on exhibitions themselves and learning about child labor for the fifth graders. It's been rewarding.
Yeah. Yeah, very cool. So, yeah, this is, yeah. So tell me about the pictures that you have in the exhibit.
Yeah, so for the Lewis Hine pictures, they have a brief arc over his career. There's several works. You know, his first major project, as I mentioned before, was at Ellis Island.
Mm-hmm.
He started those works in 1904 and took his students there and let them see and interact with the immigrants who were arriving. You know, this massive wave of people who many Americans didn't know who they were, or where they were coming from, or what language
right.
they were speaking was really terrifying
right.
to many people.
Right.
You know, them as being morally degenerate or disease-ridden were overarching conversations, and Hine, you know, wanted to document these people as they were, as these hopeful immigrants looking for a better life who had a very shared humanity with
right.
him and with everyone else. And, you know, of course, 100 years later, we're still having this conversation.
Exactly.
And you can think of the circulation of images of Syrian refugees and how those have been circulating
right.
Recently. It's still, you know, a preferred manner of getting this point across. But so several of those works are just kind of stunning portraits
mm-hmm.
of the people who are arriving in the United States for the very first time.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's, of course, a series of works from Lewis Hine's most famous body of work, which he did for the National Child Labor Committee, showing children as young as 4 or 5 in mills, in fisheries, you know, in moments where they're both at labor and mm-hmm. paused to mm-hmm. greet the camera,
mm-hmm.
which I find very haunting.
Yeah, I do too.
Yeah, and you do wonder, in the rare moments where Hine can record their names, what happened to these people? And actually,
right.
for the title image of this exhibition, which is a portrait of Addie Card, who was 12 years old and a spinner
uh-huh.
in a cotton mill, and actually that was one of Hine's most famous images anyway, and actually was on a postage stamp to
mm-hmm.
commemorate child labor reform. There's a great, somebody on the web, I don't know, I was just Googling it because I can't remember who, but
uh-huh.
went down and did this tremendous research project to learn about what happened to her
uh-huh.
after Lewis Hine left that day, and it's just a fascinating story.
Oh, that sounds awesome.
Just to see how someone's, you know, Hine might have been there for
right.
an hour, you know, a brief interloper in her life.
Right.
But yet her image is, you know, the kind of iconic image of his project and of child labor reform now.
Right.
So a series of works from that, and then a couple works from his very final big body of work, which is called The Men at Work, which was these very heroic portraits
uh-huh.
of, as the title was just, Men at Work, not the 80s band.
Yeah, I was going to say, that, yeah. like band.
No, right. You got portraits for the album cover. No. But, you know, you may recognize these works, you know, the steam fitters, the men building the Empire State Building.
Mm-hmm.
So these very noble portraits of laborers
mm-hmm.
who are extremely skilled and really intensely concentrating on the work they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's really where you see him with the greatest kind of level of aesthetic interest and composition. And then that transitions into this next generation of photographers, people like Dorothea Lange,
mm-hmm.
who do portraits of similar people. And one of the other iconic images in the show is a photograph by Dorothea Lange of a migratory cotton picker.
Mm-hmm.
And I love this photograph. Because she's, you know, she's got a wonderful eye and a wonderful darkroom ability to bring out a very sharp, strong image in
mm-hmm.
the photograph itself. But she was traveling in Arizona in 1940, documenting the working conditions there for migratory workers. And she came upon this man in a cotton field, and as she approached it with a camera, you know, not obviously this was a kind of confrontational act in many ways. People didn't want to be immortalized for this point in their lives.
Right.
But she goes up to this man who's leaning against a fence and attempts to take his picture.
Uh-huh.
And he apparently has very bad teeth.
Uh-huh.
We don't know what they look like. But in that moment, he flashes his hand across the lower half of his face,
uh-huh.
exposing his palm to the camera. And it is just very sinewy and scarred from the hard work of cotton picking.
Right.
And in that moment, you know, that lion couldn't have predicted it. It becomes a even much more powerful portrait.
I can imagine.
Likeness. Yeah. That's where I get the term likeness from.
Right.
Of this man, and it's this theme, I think, that runs beautifully through these works.
Yeah.
And so that gets picked up, you know, from Heine and the following generation. And then actually the latest work in the show is a photograph by Wright Morris, who was a photographer and author, and it's a picture called Uncle Harry Entering the Barn, and it's you only see this man's back, and he's crossing the threshold into this very darkened space, and the aesthetics very much look like many of the other photographs in this show. But what's interesting here is that Wright Morris is a novelist and a photographer, and he uses photographs to illustrate fictional stories that he's writing.
Right.
And so it's by 1940 when he's doing this story, you know, the aesthetics become so common, so well understood that it's able to be adapted by fiction writers, by Wright Morris to express not only the condition of this man, Uncle Harry, but also, you know, the kind of aesthetics that go along with it. So I think that's a nice kind of closing moment.
Yeah.
For this small show.
Yeah, I think that's really great. I think that's great. You had mentioned like before, like the photographers were in these kids' lives, like for one moment, basically to take a picture. I wonder what they were thinking, like when they saw him doing that. If they were kind of like, oh, maybe if they felt hopeful, if they even understood what he was doing.
Yeah, that's a great question, and one I wish we had more knowledge about, more record of. But what I do find interesting is that, so Lewis Heine, you know, he was cranking out these photographs when he was on these visits, and all of these works have been the negatives and such are in the National Child Labor Committee archives.
Mm-hmm.
And you can go back and see and look at the photographs from each of these visits, and, you know, the pictures that we remember are these kind of pensive moments of the children looking back.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, this was almost a cell. You can see the energy of the children when this man walks in and asks to take their picture.
Yeah.
They're goofing off and they're smiling.
Right.
And they're running around just like any child would today, even in this kind of very unfortunate situation.
Right.
But that's maybe not the kind of idea Heine was trying to get across.
Right.
So not the works that became the iconic works.
Right.
But so, yeah, it would be so fascinating to know what it would be like in your very long work day of 6 days a week, what it would be like that one day a man appears and judges you interesting enough to take your photograph.
Right,
which is incredibly uncommon at this point, right?
Yeah.
You know, most of these children would have no access to a camera.
Right,
Even as they were becoming more and more popular, you know, with these, in the early 20th century, the availability of commercial cameras that could be purchased by many Americans, these children likely were not part of that.
Right, right.
Yeah.
And also, I mean, I was also wondering, like, if these kids even knew, had any idea of a better life, that they even knew to, if they even, like, were capable of having hope for another life, that maybe this, maybe this man would bring them hope, but they might not have even known.
Yes. Yeah, and to wonder about what the circulation, what they thought these photos might be for, what they might have gone on to do,
right?
What great effect they actually did have?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, who knows?
Yeah.
I wonder if many of these people ever did find that out. I don't know.
Right. Well, and I was kind of interested in the again about the line between like art and what was it? Activism. I seriously doubt that any art collector during that time, during the Depression, would have collected these photos to hang in their living room. I don't know. We would probably be more likely for someone to do it today, but I don't know. Where do you see that? I don't know. I was looking at I talked about the Ai Weiwei, photograph that's been in circulation recently. And, talked to Eric Shiner of, of his museum and about that, about his, that exhibit, the Andy Warhol and the Ai Weiwei, and, talking about that photo. And I'm not sure that, like I said, I'm not sure that that would be in anyone's living room, but, I don't know. Maybe like in a few years, like maybe in a few decades, someone might want to collect that. Where do you see these pictures going? Or
yeah, I mean it's very true. I don't know if we can say that those photographs for the NCLC were initially produced as what we would consider art objects. Mm-hmm. The way that we can go out and buy photographs immediately from a fine art photographer today, but certainly I think, we can go back and recognize the importance of these photographs, mm-hmm. and the talent of the photographers and the importance of them to both stories of activism, mm-hmm. and of fine art photography.
Right.
And we see that, I in this little show, I try and show how the next generation working during the Great Depression, mm-hmm. are influenced, but that story keeps going. It goes through the civil rights movement in Vietnam,
right.
where we have plenty of photographers working, mm-hmm. in similar manners. And to think of photographs from those two specific eras, or from the, let's say, the 1950s and 60s in general, have iconic resonance with the importance of works that are produced. And I think I'm a great believer in breaking down such firm barriers between any of these, and
right.
I think to recognize them, their artistry of these works that certainly had social purposes is very valid and very
right.
informative. Art has been political for a very long time.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah, just because we're using a camera now,
right.
We'll
using
we'll
our fancier camera.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. So what other exhibits do you have going on coming up?
Well, I was just able to work on a tremendous gift of American art from two of our patrons. We just recently installed 73 paintings of American art from the James W. and Francis Gibson McLaughlin collection.
Mm-hmm.
So just absolutely stunning works of American art produced between 1836 and 1926 that include 5 George Bellows and 12 John Singer Sargents.
Mm-hmm.
And so to do that alongside of the Likeness of Labor photography show was actually great and illuminating because this collection actually includes some great works by George Bellows and Robert Henry, these ashcan painters who are working, in the very same years that Lewis Hine was working in New York City. And Lewis Hine was really interested in many of the same things as these painters. And I never expected this magnanimous gift of paintings from our wonderful patrons and this small photo show that I was working on to intersect.
Mm-hmm.
But thinking of Lewis Hine as an ashcan artist just is incredibly fun for me.
Yeah.
So that is a permanent installation
cool.
of their collection here at the museum. But then elsewhere, my colleagues have wonderful shows coming up. In June, we're opening a Kehinde Wiley exhibition.
Okay.
That was organized by the Brooklyn Museum of Art.
Uh-huh.
But also in photography, we're opening two exhibitions.
Cool.
One on Gordon Parks, speaking of the civil rights movement, that was organized by the MFA Boston. It's called Back to Fort Scott, where he goes back to a town he grew up in and photographs how things may have changed since his departure. That was intended to be published in Life magazine and never actually was.
Mm-hmm.
And then another exhibition, another small exhibition, the same size as the one I just completed, is on the Hungarian-American photographer Kertész, and looking at his body of work. And that's actually being organized by our director, Alex Nargis, in anticipation of a larger show. So I'm excited to see, you know, what that may reveal, because this is a learning experience for me, for an artist that I know, Kertész, that he has studied and appreciated for a very long time.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Cool. So big stuff coming up.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we're very excited. Very excited.
Well, that's awesome. Well, thank you so much, Chris, for talking to me. I really appreciate it.
Oh, yeah. Brooke, it's been fantastic. I always enjoy just a half hour to sit down and think about this and think about all the importance of this work.
Awesome. Thank you so much to Chris Oliver for telling us about the Likeness of Labor exhibit that's happening at the Virginia Museum of Fine Arts. And thank you to you for listening. I learned a lot. If you're in the Virginia area, be sure to check out the Virginia Museum of Fine Arts. If you are interested in having us promote your product or service, if you have a comment, or if you have ideas for future podcasts, or would like to be on the show yourself, please contact me at arttalkwithbrooke@gmail.com. That's all one word and Brooke with an E. Thanks.